You're listening to the Functional Nerds Podcast with your hosts, Patrick Hester and Tracy Townsend.
And Tracy, we are back. It is the weekend. It is getting really close to the major holidays of the year. It's snowing in Denver. I don't know what it's looking like in Chicago or Detroit, but it's definitely, we've hit in a cold spot here in Denver.
It's bucketing rain right now and has been since Friday afternoon. So we are, you know, we're coming up on close to 24 hours of rain over here. But, you know, so far, nobody's building boats.
Well, you got the lake, though. Are you sure no one's building boats?
I'm an inland suburb, so I should clarify that no one in my neighborhood is building boats. But you are correct. Yeah, there's always a chance that you know, Lower Wacker Drive has become really, really, really Lower Wacker Drive.
you just made me think of that the third Batman film with Christian Bale.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Where they're walking out on the ice underneath the bridge.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was that also shot in Chicago? Like, I know everything else.
The majority of the Nolan films were shot in Chicago because it lends itself, or at least certain of its architecture lends itself to coming off as Gotham, especially with, you know, you add a little CGI in the background for some, to edit out some of the buildings. But yet you mentioned Detroit, of course. So yes. Coming to us with a weather report and so much more from Detroit, we have our guest for this week. This is Zigzag Claiborne, who is the author of most recently released Afropuffs Are the Antennae of the Universe, which is the sequel to the Brothers Jetstream Leviathan. Zig, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Weather report, it's raining. It sucks, but it's not snow.
Yeah, it's not snow. Not snow.
It's raining. It sucks.
Oh, yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, at this time of year, rain goes from being this sort of cleansing thing to being sort of like, if you tried a little harder, we would round you up to snow. But, you know, we really just, we need you to apply yourself, rain. You know.
See, here in Denver, the weather people on the local news, they do the thing where they're standing up usually, but they lean on the desk and they kind of pull the camera in and they're like, look. I know you don't like the snow, but God damn it, we're in a drought. We need that moisture.
And at some point they're like,
shut up. We need the moisture.
Like, this is goddamn Denver. Like, what are you doing here? If you like, honestly.
Oh, there is that meme. I just saw it. Like Stace, one of our patrons, I think Stace actually shared it. It may have been Stace, mm-hmm. but it's the, hey, doing okay here in Denver. We just had our third week of snow. It's piled up everywhere. Most of the systems have closed down. You know, if you're thinking about moving here, just
don't
move somewhere else.
Don't. Yeah, yeah. Of course, we didn't get together to talk about weather as much as we're having a good time poking fun at Denver. Oh, so I gotta say to the listeners before I let Zig loose here, and I'm gonna do my best to make sure that I can feel his blush all the way from the Chicagoland area. When Zig reached out to me a little while back and offered me a chance to read in ARC form Afropuffs or the Antennae of the Universe, I was excited to do it, and I started reading the ARC, and I got as far as what my Kindle told me was like 10% of the way into the document when I turned right back around and I went online and I said, I need to give this man my money. And I bought a copy of it. And so I ended up.
You voted with your money. That's good.
I did. So I want you to preach the gospel of what you have created to our listeners here, Zig.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. That is so, I can't even speak now because this book.
Oh no, I broke him.
You broke the Zig.
Oh no.
This, you know how the people say, you know, it's been a labor of love, and then you roll your eyes when they say it. Well, mm-hmm. Roll your eyes because this book was a labor of love for me. I really wanted to get it done this year and out this year because this year has sucked so much for so many people. I kind of wanted to drop a present for everybody, something fun, something exciting, and something that says, we got this. No matter what you're going through, we got this. And so mm-hmm. that's Afropuffs in a nutshell.
I think, you know, I was trying to think to myself, like, how do I describe to people who have not read Zig's work before what they're getting into when they pick up Afropuffs? Because it's a sequel to The Brothers Jetstream, but it also, you don't have to have read the Brothers Jetstream to get what it's trying to give you. But I ended up thinking, like, you know what, I'm going to drill down into the words of people who are a little more articulate than I am. So I you know, kind of dickered around a little bit. And I found Blackgate Magazine's Jeffrey Ford had a really great review a little more than a year ago of actually the Brothers Jetstream. And I think what he has to say about it totally translates into, like, because you have this sort of like ideological and artistic successor to it in Afropuffs. He described it as that Zigzag Claiborne writes novels that ask courage of the reader and are grand discombobulations of the expected. And I thought that was a wonderful, it's Afrofuturism. It's a little bit punk. It's a little bit jive. It is a little bit, I don't know. I'm trying to figure out. This is like if somehow the people who were the makers of The Wiz got a hold of Buck Rogers and said, no, we can do this one better.
I love that.
So I think it is offering something that you're right. It is a gift. It is a delightful read that I highly recommend. So I'm gonna ask, because I've been, you know, kind of talking up the game here so much. Afropuffs has something that I've never seen before at the start of a book, which I thought was super cool. You made a playlist.
Yes.
So I want to hear the story behind giving your readers a playlist to listen to for your book.
You know, when I write, I always have music playing, and all those tracks on there were tracks that I was listening to as I wrote it. And then I started to realize that I wasn't really writing to the tracks, but the tracks fit along with the story. And so I'm like, well, you know what? Let's include that with the book so that readers can kind of sort of get that same feeling of, you know, I'm watching this badass movie and this music cues into it. And I mentioned a lot of songs in the book too. I mean, you know, being a Detroiter, music is part of me. So there's no way I couldn't have a lot of music in this book. I mean, you know, even the cover of the book kind of has a Purple Rain feel to it. And that's all intentional, you know, since I'm a child of the 80s too. So I had to break out my prints. But yeah, the soundtrack was definitely, it was, you know, once I saw what was happening with it, I'm like, I got to share this with the readers. Even if you don't know the particular songs, you know, maybe you'll go out and hit it up on Spotify, which, as a matter of fact, I just created the playlist on Spotify. So,
oh, nice.
Yeah.
All the hard work is done, readers.
All you got to do is click a link and you can, I guess I got to post a link somewhere, you know, technology.
But, yeah, but they could probably search for it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole story of the soundtrack. It's like, you know, just almost just a little addendum to the entire plot of the book.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Like, Patrick, thinking back to your book, was there a soundtrack to your book? Like, could such a thing be created, do you think?
Yeah, because I had talked a lot to Delilah Dawson, and that's something that she does quite a bit.
Oh, okay.
So the fun part about my book was that I put a lot of my stuff into the character, you know, and then I started thinking, I need to not do this. I need to make this character different and not just make her me.
A little bit of distance, yeah.
So I gave her the worst possible thing I could think of. Something that just fills me with dread and actually makes my stomach churn a little bit. I made her a diehard disco fan.
Oh,
yeah! I thought you were going to go country with that. I was
no, I was that would have been the other way.
I was feeling dread, and you hit me with disco. Which is,
I grew up in a house full of country, and so my rebellion was to never listen to country again. But yeah, no, I made her a disco fan. So then I had to actually research disco, and I did that on purpose because I wanted to have to find out what is and isn't considered good disco.
Oh, okay. So now, now you've got me. Like, I can't not follow up on that. Like, is there, like, in the disco community, I'm assuming there's a disco community, there's a community for everything. Like, what's good disco?
Yeah, see, there's good and there's bad. There's sellouts and there's not sellouts. Like, it's just like every other music genre, right?
Oh, okay.
And so I tried to find some of the definitive kind of disco music and songs, the things that made the genre what it was. And I kind of built that into the playlist and built a playlist for her. And then in the second book that never got published, she basically travels to a parallel world, and that's where the elves and stuff come from. And so it's a low-tech world, and storytelling is a big deal. And she sits down across the fire from a bunch of locals, and they're all telling stories, and they're like, well, we want you to tell a story, tell us a story. She says, well, let me tell you about the dancing queen. she was only 17, you know, and I kind of used some of that to just to kind of hint to the fact that it was dancing queen. So
that's amazing.
So if any publishers out there want that book, you know,
yeah,
you got my number.
Okay, so there you go. That's the book. we're doing 2-for-1 promotions today. We're like extra functional.
But, you know, as long as you don't diss Donna Summer, I'm okay with
it. I don't.
Okay, then.
No. Okay. Donna Summer was one of the pivotal characters inside of disco.
Yes.
You know, so she almost made it, like, legit. You know what I mean? So, yeah, she's on the playlist. There's a playlist out there somewhere. I think I did put it on Spotify, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's sort of funny, but when I was younger, both as like a reader and a person who watches movies and listens to music and just like all the different media and entertainment I consumed, I think I was way more elitist when I was younger. I was much more keen to throw up my nose in the direction of music I didn't like or movies that I thought were, were too trendy or whatever else. I don't know if I was ever exactly like a nerd purist or like trying to do those sorts of obnoxious, well, do you know what happened in season 3 of whatever sort of things? Yeah, well, of course you do. Like that's how we know that was actually how you got interviewed by John to end up on a podcast in the first place. You had to know what happened in season 3 of whatever. But I found as I've gotten older, I've gotten much more like, you know what? Does the thing make you happy? Do the thing.
I'll throw it out there to Zick's point. It's, you know, the music, especially when you're watching something, a TV show, a movie, whatever, the music can be very impactful, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's like 80% of the reason why Guardians of the Galaxy took off.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Which,
oh,
again, it's kind of, my brain is hitting Afro puffs there as I'm saying that. Like, I think there's a bit of a through line.
There's, you know, Supernatural just ended after 15 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
There's a song that has become associated with that, right? It's Carry On My Wayward Sons. And they have used it throughout the entire run of the show in various ways. And of course, they bookend it and they end it with that because you couldn't imagine that show without that song at this point. A great show that I loved was called Justified, right? And they used a song called You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive every season because it's been covered so many different times. And it just brings something, right? It hits an emotion for you. So music, I think, is huge. And why wouldn't you do that in books? Why wouldn't you have that soundtrack? I think it's brilliant to have a soundtrack because, again, to Zig's point, he's sitting there and he's writing and there's music playing and that's influencing him somehow, some way. It's hitting an emotional note, right?
Mm-hmm.
At a pivotal moment in a scene. Why wouldn't you share that with the reader and just say, you know, here, hit play on this. You know, it's kind of like, here, start Wizard of Oz and start Dark Side of the Moon at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Play them together. See what happens.
Yep. Do this just like everybody did in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to get back to that whole, I don't know, I guess we'll call it the flavor of Afro Puffs. So we talked about the music, which is awesome. And I love the playlist. And now I know what I'm doing when we're done recording and I jump on my Spotify. But what I'm curious about is like, what are the visuals that were popping in your head? Because I'm thinking of like the cover. And if you, dear listeners, are listening to this now, you need to go and Google yourself Afropuffs or the Antennae of the Universe, because it's such a cool cover. It's got this saturated pink with this gorgeous woman with a bionic arm on the front with, of course, the Afropuffs. But it has a real slightly weathered, almost like this is a late 1970s paperback that you found off of a bookstore shelf in a secondhand shop kind of thing. And it's just so atmospheric. So there's some really powerful visuals working there. I want you to talk about, like, what are your visual inspirations?
Those old pulps were a huge visual inspiration. I mean, when the designer showed me the cover idea, I was like, okay, you got the book. You got the book from start to finish, because mm-hmm. that nailed it. That sense of things are kind of beat up, but not dragged out. Mm-hmm. That was a huge visual throughout the book for me. That's like the characters are kind of bedraggled, their vehicles are getting beat up all the time, but they are still in the game. Mm-hmm. So it mm-hmm. had that kind of, it's slightly somebody described it to me as it's retro, but retro as seen by somebody from the future, which I'm like, okay, I can get behind that. That works for me. Retro, but seen by somebody from the future, imagining what retro was.
Yeah. I've got very mixed feelings about J.J. Abrams, but I remember at one point when they were interviewing him about his impending work when it hadn't started yet on Star Wars, he was talking about how he wanted it to look like the ancient history of the future. Mm. And this is different. This isn't like the ancient history of the future. This is like the throwback future in some ways.
Yeah. But still yeah. very contemporary. I mean, everything in the, because it doesn't have that throwback feel where you're reading it like, oh, okay, this would have been a 1970s movie kind of thing, mm-hmm. or even a 1980s, because there are a lot of references to the 80s in it and the feel to it, but mm-hmm. it's not a nostalgic book in tone or look or anything. It's very much future looking, but it's yeah. like, you know, a lot of times in science fiction, we talk about the future as if the past, not the past, but as if the present doesn't exist. So mm-hmm. I wanted to do this book. It's a near future book. I never really tell you exactly when it's happening, but it's pretty much contemporary, but they've got all these cool gadgets and stuff. But yeah. the look of it would be kind of a cross between the Purple Rain movie and, yeah, Flash Gordon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you've mentioned Prince a couple times now. Just a funny little side story here. My mom, when Prince's album came out, and got a ton of coverage over it. I remember her sitting me down at the kitchen table and saying, "I've just heard about this album from this Prince person. I don't want you listening to it. I don't want you to listen to it. I don't want you and your friends to listen to it. I hear it's really, really bad."
Was your mom the kind of mom who knew that was an invitation for you? Like, was she?
We all went out and got it. Yeah. Really. I told my friends, I'm like, "Oh my God, we have to listen to this album right the fuck now."
I want to know, like, was her mom foo good enough that she wanted you to listen to it, and she knew she was egging you on? No.
She was serious.
She played herself.
She rarely ever sat me down and said, "You are not allowed to do XYZ." One of the only other times I can remember that is my friend's girlfriend rode the bus with me one day and mm-hmm. got off at my stop because she didn't want to go the rest of the way, like three more stops by herself. So she got off at my stop and said, "You know, walk me there and come back." And I'm like, "Oh, fine, whatever." And so I said, "Let me throw my stuff in my house." I throw my stuff in the house and mom sees her and she pulls me down. She sits me down. "I don't want no babies in this house." And I'm like, "Mom, that's not my girlfriend. That's my friend's girlfriend. She just doesn't want to walk home by herself. I'll be right back."
Yeah,
no babies.
That's amazing.
Yeah, the Prince hysteria was real back in the day. I mean, people now don't realize it, but yeah, when you live through it, it was almost like reefer madness back. You mentioned mm-hmm. Prince, and everybody automatically just knew you were going to come home wearing a thong and a trench coat and nothing else.
And partying like it was 1999.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and I don't want to, it's always a little bit dangerous to take artists whose work is, you know, powerful and influential and beloved, but also different, and kind of start doing apples to apples comparisons. But I think in some ways, Prince did for the United States what Bowie did for European music. I mean, granted, you know, both of them, their work crossed the pond constantly, but I think Prince was kind of like the flag in the ground of, you know, and particularly Black creators being able to kind of see in themselves this kind of like wonderfully beautiful, chaotic aesthetic inventiveness.
Definitely, definitely. I mean, he has a long lineage that, you know, I mean, Little Richard, James Brown. Mm-hmm. We had all these artists who just came out and said, I'm going to give you something slightly different. Mm-hmm. And lulled you in with that slightly different. But then once you were in, then they hit you with, oh, slightly is off the table. We're going in a whole different direction.
Did I say slightly? I'm sorry, I stuttered.
Yeah, I don't want to diminish the word or make the word sound weird, but like entertainer, right? They put on a show. They were everything. They could do it all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that word everything is key, because they didn't just get up there and sing.
No,
or, there was intentionality behind what they were doing, and that's something that a lot. I mean, this is me putting on my old man pants right now, but there are a lot of artists who have forgotten about that, the intention of what they're doing. They're just like, well, I'm going to do this and put it out there and hopefully I'll make $1 million. Mm-hmm. But there's got to be a little bit more behind what you're doing for people to be talking about you, you know, 20, 30, 40 years down the line.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I tend to put on my old man hat too, because I don't like
old man hat and pants. What's left? Do I have to have an old lady shirt, or like, what's the, never mind. You go on.
I always complain, and I don't particularly like, you know, people who, their whole thing is they can dance.
Oh yeah.
Right. Okay, great. You can dance. Now let's strip it down and get you on a stage in a cafe or something. Can you still play your song? Can you still mm-hmm. do your music? Can you still do, and they can't. Mm-hmm. The thing about someone like Prince, my God, he was such a good guitar player. He knew how to do all of it. Mm-hmm. And that comes through, right? When you're just that talented, it just comes through. You understand. It's a completely different experience seeing someone like that live and just hearing their music and everything that they put into it, versus, unfortunately, and I know that I'm not being kind, but versus someone who gets out there and lip syncs and dances, you know, it's just not the same.
Yeah, well, in that case, you know, yeah, the spectacle is so tied to this, you know, and the dancing is amazing. It's athletic. You know, whether you're looking at the Super Bowl halftime show kind of treatment or at a live concert for a lot of pop singers and performers, they're doing genuinely athletic, impressive stuff. But at the same time, they can't actually sing the way they need to while doing that. And so the lip syncing, you know, you end up kind of stealing from Peter to pay Paul in that sort of situation, because you want to put on this visual spectacle. You have to make a compromise with the audio spectacle. And audio spectacles, I mean, you know, the audio experience, right? The sonic experience of it. And I think that there are some artists, and I think really just a handful of them, where their consciousness of themselves and like who they can be on stage and like what they're sort of offering is enough in and of itself, that whether they are, you know, putting on a bunch of moves or if they're performing the music as the music, they are still totally riveting. For a long time, Peter Gabriel, you know, had that sort of thing going on with these elaborate makeup shifts and stuff, and like the lighting would change and it looks like he's this, you know, gaunt, sepulchral figure, and then the lighting changes and it's almost clown face. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of inventiveness going on there to figure out, how do I offer the total package and not make compromises? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's tough.
That's very hard to do. And I aspire to do that with my writing, because mm-hmm. I've often told people that, you know, if I had any musical talent, I would have been Prince, because that to Prince to me was the pinnacle. You know, I mean, just pick up a guitar and play it, sit at a piano, play it, what the drums, whatever you pick up and touch, you create something out of it. And I wanted to be able to do that with what I wrote, which I'm not saying that I am Prince in any way, shape, or form in writing, but that's what I aspire to, that sense of let's explore what we can do with the tools in front of us.
But I even have. Yeah, no, I love that you're talking about that, because one of the things I had jotted down here that I want to talk to you about is the things that I love about your writing is that it's humor, it's adventure, it's family driven. There's a sense of both found family and like literal family that sort of underpins it, and also hyper competence. Like, yeah, characters screw up from time to time, but like pretty much everybody, they know their business and they know what they're about, even if they're sort of having to wing it and make it up as they go along. Like these are talented, sharp characters who you're excited to spend time with because you feel like you're, back months ago, we were talking with Michael R. Underwood when he came on to talk about his latest book. And I talked about how, for me, like competence porn is sort of a thing. Like I love characters who are good at stuff and they get me super excited. So what gets you excited about your own writing? If Prince is your North Star, that kind of energetic inventiveness and multi-talentedness, what about your own writing when you sit back, you're like, damn, that was good. I'm like, I was happy to do that.
I like when I can surprise myself. Mm-hmm. Like Prince has this lyric, not knowing where I'm going, this galaxy's better, not having a place to go. Now I know. And that's how I like to write. It's like I'm a complete pantser. I get in. I don't necessarily know where I'm going. I have a feeling about where I want to go. And when I'm writing, and if I step back and like, ooh, you nailed that feeling, then I'm happy with I'm happy with myself. And a lot of my most favorite parts of Afropups are not the action parts. They're little quiet parts where I kind of surprise myself by saying, let's let the character sit and breathe and see what happens. I mean, there's a point where they're in Atlantis, which is not a spoiler because Atlantis is a big part of Afropuffs and Brothers Jetstream. Mm-hmm. But they go to basically an outdoor concert in Atlantis and challenge the musicians to play some, you know, they call it outblank music, which is regular Earth music. And they're sitting there riffing off of Computer Blue. And I just love that section because it's so quiet, but it leads to this really bombastic fight scene. And so just mixing up that quietude, and you don't know that it's going to lead to this bombastic fight scene, but when it gets there, you like, there's no way it could not lead to this bombastic fight scene. So that's what I like, those little surprises.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of, I mean, especially for as much work as writing is, like the days that you spend and the stuff that you create doesn't make you happy and doesn't satisfy you. Being able to surprise yourself and delight yourself, it's a ray of hope. It makes you feel like, you know what, this is worth it. I'm going to be able to give my readers something that they can get excited about too.
Oh yeah, because I'm a big one about having fun with what you're doing. You know, either as a reader, as a writer, whatever I'm consuming, I want to have fun with it. I don't want to just sit there on autopilot. And when it's done, I immediately start to forget what I experienced. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that I will say about my writing is, you know, it cannot be read on autopilot. If that's what you're looking for, look elsewhere.
Yeah, no, I'm really glad that you brought that up, because as much as we've been talking about it being sort of like energetic and playful and humorous and adventurous, this kind of goes back to when we look down our nose at things or make assumptions about it. I think a lot of people view those as code words for, I don't know how to put it, but that's sort of just like fluffy fiction or like a beach read or what have you. And again, I love people loving stuff, so that's, I'm not speaking those words with judgment, but it really is, there's, you know, the construction of your sentences, the visuals in the moment, the way you switch from being literal to metaphorical, like there are some mental gymnastics that the reader goes through to kind of stick with you there. And I think that's part of the reward. That's part of the, you know, if you can, in the same way that, I'm going to go back to Prince, like his music isn't obvious. And, you know, there's a reason why the radio keeps playing the same limited number of his songs when his total discography is so wildly kind of different and divergent and diverse, and has so many different sounds to it. It asks a lot.
bonus points for discography.
Ooh, thank you. Yeah. when there's not discs anymore.
Oh, there's still discs.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's definitely not a bad thing for an artist to ask a lot of their audiences, because a lot of the best movies and books, and it takes a little bit of work on the audience's part to really get the full flavor of whatever it is they're experiencing. So that's what I mean by the autopilot. Because I'm definitely not against fluff. I love me some fluff. But even in fluff, you can still surprise people and give them, you know, something just a little bit more than just your standard plot beat. We're at the end, you know.
Yeah.
Like even in cartoons, I've been watching the cartoon Hilda on Netflix, and that's made for kids. Oh, I love that so much. And it would be considered a light, fluffy cartoon. You know, it's not touching on deep things, but there are moments of, you know, little character interactions, little bits of dialogue where it's just like just different enough that it stops your flow and makes you think about what they are saying to you, what they're presenting to you. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I mean by the autopilot. Autopilot is when you can watch something or read something while you're making dinner, while you're helping the kids with homework, and while the dog is chasing, you know, the cat around, and you won't miss anything at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, speaking of fluff, we've been talking for quite a while, and I'm wondering if we should do a little bit of fluff on our part, which is our picks of the week, which isn't really fluff. It's fluff, but it's also a little bit.
My pick of the week is Dostoevsky, so I don't know what you're talking about.
Whoa.
What do we think? Picks of the week?
Yeah.
Picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
And Zig, a little birdie told me that you have a pick, so would you like to go first?
I would love to. Okay, so can I do a double pick?
You can, yes. We charge twice as much, but it's okay.
It's okay, because I'm twice as poor. First pick is the movie Claws on Netflix. I watched it for the first time last year, and I'm like, okay, this is now going to be one of my yearly Christmas movies. I love that movie. It's just like we were saying, it presents you with things that are just a little bit different than what you're expecting, but
is that the animated one?
Yes. Or? Yeah. Okay, the animated one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Klaus, Klaus. Mm-hmm. It's just a great, great movie. I mean, there's so many little touches to it that they added in it's not like they call attention to these things. It's just there if you pick up on it. And I love that kind of stuff.
That is good.
And the second one is a book called The Secret Lives of Church Ladies by Disha Filial. It's a short story collection of just these really tightly written human stories. And it's a lot of humor in it. I highly recommend, if you just want a quiet read, pick up this book, The Secret Lives of Church Ladies.
That sounds very cozy.
Special.
Yes.
I mean,
anybody over a certain age knows what you just did right there.
Yeah. I mean,
he's back. He might still be doing that. He's been doing stand-up again, so anything's possible.
I guess, yeah.
I don't know. I'm to be honest with you, I'm a little afraid of The Secret Lives of Church Ladies.
You should be.
You know that I want to know that.
You should be, because the church ladies are like, you know, You think the Illuminati is mysterious?
No, they're apex predators, man. You don't be messing with the church ladies.
No.
They know everything and everybody. They're going to come and they hunt in packs. Yeah.
But this book is just so warm and funny. I mean, there's a line, if I can read a little bit from it. It just is one line. It's like, by 11th grade, I had tired of fighting off boys and gave in. But none of the boys I fooled around with in the park behind the school deserved my peach cobbler. See, you know... And she's not talking about, you know, that's not a metaphor. No. She's talking about this. The story is about, you know, recipes and getting handed down from granny. And one of them is a peach cobbler recipe. And, you know, that's life there. People regard their recipes with their lives.
Yeah.
I can't remember the show at this point, but I remember like that was even a plot point in the show, some sitcom or something, where like the church always had the bake off thing, and someone wanted someone else's recipe, and it's like, nope. Nope, you're not getting that recipe. Well, what if I trade you this, and this for it? Nope. Well, what about this, and this? You know, and it was like a whole commerce system to try to get the recipe.
Oh, yeah.
I was just sitting here thinking when Tracy was talking about, you know, how the church ladies know everything. I'm like, yeah, they know where the fruitcake's buried.
Well, thinking about the peach cobbler thing, Mickey Kendall wrote something for ABC News right on Thanksgiving that was like a battle of dueling articles thing between which is better, pumpkin pie or apple pie. And she took the side of apple pie. And part of her story was that the man she is married to, she was enjoying dating him and like everything seemed cool and whatnot. But she like knew that he was a keeper and that she'd fallen in love with him when he made her apple pie. There we go. We have real life evidence.
Yes.
But was there cheese on it?
Apparently not, based on the story. Yeah.
It's just awful. No. Why would you make someone eat apple pie without melted cheese on top?
I don't know, man. But you know, we've come to our loggerheads on opinions of food before.
Yeah, she's probably one of those ice cream people.
Mm. Let's not be dog and ice cream on.
No, man, you could put ice cream in a shoe and I would be like, that's good.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't even care whose shoe, man. Yeah, like one of those ones that's by the side of the road. Why is there always just one shoe, by the way? Who is driving around with one foot out their window that they keep? You've noticed that before? When you go driving down the road, there's always every few miles just one random ass shoe just laying there.
We have no idea what you're talking about, Tracy.
Okay. All right. It's fine. I've been collecting them to be ice cream bowls anyway. It's fine. All right. So, Patrick, you or me, what do you say?
I say you. Go.
All right. Cool. So in the pandemic verse, of course, many of us are kind of sheltering in place in various ways. And so gaming is tough, you know, getting together with the groups of people you like to get together with. And there's one category of gaming that I think is a pain point for a lot of gamers, two-player games. There are not a lot of good tabletop two-player games out there that folks can get into, or at least there don't seem to be. But my daughter and my husband have been dueling each other fiercely for the last several days over a totally wonderful card game called Claim. It also has a sequel called Claim 2, unsurprisingly. In addition to having totally wonderful, adorable artwork of a sort of high fantasy-ish nature, it's basically a trick-taking card game. Where the premise behind it is that the king has died without a clear successor, and the only way for you to assert your claim on the throne against your rival, the other player, is by collecting the endorsements of the various species that make up this fantasy world. And so each one of these species is a different suit in the deck of cards, and they have different ways that they sort of break the rules, but it's a trick-taking game. You have to follow suit, unless, of course, the suit that you're playing has some power that allows you to overcome what's going on. And it's got several rounds, and each round you have a slightly different function that gets you towards the end game. And it's super fast moving. The whole game plays in about 15 minutes. You can get several hands in for over the course of an early evening. And I am proud to say that despite the fact that my husband is one of the smartest people I've ever known, my daughter has cleaned his clock out of the seven times they've played so far. She's won five. Clearly, if we can't get her into a decent college and pay for it, we will just send her to Vegas to do a hustle, and it'll be fine. Yeah. Great.
You know, they watch for people that are hustling them.
I mean,
so you will have to be careful.
You haven't met Deirdre. She is, in addition to being charming, actually one of the more deadly people I know. Her hobby is punching, just like hitting things. But also at the same time, hitting things in a way where you wouldn't dream of. Basically, all of us report to Deirdre. She's like central management, is what's happening. Yeah.
Tracy, blink if you're being held hostage by your daughter.
You can't see the blink. Patrick, what's up with you? What's your pick?
Well, I'm going in a different direction per usual, but I'm rocking some new equipment today. I got a new laptop that I waited a little over a month for, a new microphone set up. With the laptop, it's a new MacBook Pro. Came the a year's free subscription to Apple TV, I didn't have Apple TV before. And I was telling Giles about that over at Beyond the Trope. And he immediately wanted me to go watch a show that he loves. And I did watch the first episode. But there was a different show that had caught my eye a while ago when the service launched that I really wanted to check out. It's called The Morning Show. Have you heard anything about this?
No,
it's Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon and Steve Carell.
Oh, wow.
And it's all about a morning show, like a TV morning show, right? That is America's favorite, but they're starting to lag in the ratings a little bit. But the show starts with the Steve Carell character being fired because he's the Matt Lauer character.
Okay. Oh.
So he got caught. He got caught doing a bunch of bad things to women. Mm-hmm. And using his power to get sex and all kinds of really bad stuff. And the show kind of, he plays that, how do I want to put this? He plays that douchebag dick character so fucking well, who just doesn't believe that he did anything wrong, number one, and thinks that everything was mutual. Right. And over the arc of the like 10 episodes, he just doesn't really give up on that. He thinks that he's a victim. But you as the viewer see how truly evil he was and the things that he did.
OK.
You have Jennifer Aniston's character is the other co-host. Right. And so she's having to deal with the fact that legitimately she didn't see any of this happening and feels like a fool. And then they bring in Reese Witherspoon as the young kind of journalist go-getter who just can't let this go. And so the show is relentless about this subject matter. And it's just, you can't look away from it. It's some of the best drama I've seen in a long time. It's incredibly compelling. You see the impact of what Carell's character did to various women on the show. You see the impact that it's now having on Aniston, who is clueless at first. And then again, over the course of the arc, that starts to change. And you see just the insidiousness of this network that let it happen.
Huh.
And how they're trying to scapegoat other people. It's really complicated and it's really, really good. And it's what they launched the network with, the Apple TV thing.
Wow.
I have no idea if they're going to do any more of it. It ends in a really, really good spot. I can see where they could do more. I was really impressed with Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon, you know, on this show and kind of taking the leads and the reins and doing the things that they were doing. It's just a really powerful show. I can't recommend it enough. If you have the ability to see Apple TV, if you can even get a free preview or something, like watch that show. I think it's worthwhile.
Wow. All right. That's a powerful rec right there.
Yeah, I don't get serious very often, so
yeah,
when I do, pay attention.
Yeah, you kind of brought the lights down real low there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I do that sometimes.
That's all right. Well, nothing could take the joy from Afropuffs from us. And because we're spreading the gospel here, I want you to tell people, Zig, about where they can find you and where they can find your stuff in that great, wide, internet-driven world that we're in now.
Me, you can find me at, website is writeonwriteon.com. And the first write on is WRITE and then on, then RIGHTON.com. And, you know, the usual Twitter places at ZZ Claiborne. And you can find the books everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, your favorite indie bookstore, which preferably, but mm-hmm. wherever you feel comfortable ordering your books, I'm there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, folks, so treat yourself this holiday season. This episode is going to be landing on the 15th of December. So if you end up seeing it on or around that time, it will not be too late for you to get your hands on some ZZ Claiborne and treat yourself for the holidays. All right, gentlemen, it's been awesome.
Yeah, great show.
A blast. Thank you so much.
Our pleasure.
Hey, we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Functional Nerds Podcast. If you're looking for other great podcasts to listen to, I recommend Beyond the Trope. They premiere new nerdy episodes every week. Giles and Michelle have piled up over 7 years worth of interviews with best-selling authors, award-winning actors, and other leaders in the creative community. And even though, I mean, they've sincerely disappointed me by not coordinating a meet and greet with every dog they know, their Patreon supporters and fans love them for keeping their weekly episodes short, sweet, and full of laughs. Check them out over at beyondthetrope.com. Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a backer of the show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. We have all new levels with some fantastic rewards like access to our patrons-only Facebook group, exclusive extra shows and content like the new video podcast, Just 10 Minutes, book giveaways, yep, we're giving away books, and even short story critiques provided by Tracy every month. If any of that sounds good to you, again, visit patreon.com/functionalnerds. This podcast is copyrighted by the Functional Nerds under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. To learn more about the Functional Nerds, visit functionalnerds.com.